What's up, my friend? Welcome to the Finding Direction podcast. My name is Stu Massengill, and I'm here every single week to bring you a passionate guest or message dedicated to helping you find your purpose so that you can live a life full of passion, fulfillment, and happiness. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for hanging out with me, and let's dive in. Welcome to episode 309 on the Finding Direction podcast. This week, I'm excited to bring you an episode that I actually did just a couple years ago when we were more so in the beginning of the podcast. It's with a gentleman and his name is David Meltzer. And he is someone that is just an absolute gem to this world. I encourage you, go follow him on social media, see what he's up to. He is someone who is just pouring so many incredible things into this world. And to give you a few pieces of his background, not all of it because he's got too much, but he is the founder of a show called Office Hours with David Meltzer. He interviews some of the most successful people in the world. It's on Apple TV. You can find it in all sorts of different places. He is also the co-founder of Sports One Marketing. He's a philanthropist, a keynote speaker. He's the host of his own podcast called The Playbook, which I highly, highly recommend you to check out. And again, he's someone that is just truly has a heart of gold and is spreading that into the world. And on this episode, a few things you can expect is we talk about David's journey. And one of the big things is how oftentimes money is the wrong target. So if you're looking towards finances and money and that's sort of your driver, I would really encourage you to dive into this episode because David has some unbelievably powerful lessons you'll take from his own life. And we also talk about the secret around what happens when you are consistent. And this is something that when David and I first connected, he shared this philosophy with me and it blew my mind. It still continues to blow my mind. And so you absolutely need to check this out because if you're struggling with consistency, if you've been consistent in something, this is going to show you really what's going on under the surface, and it is unbelievable. And we also talk about, most importantly, how do you start living in your truth? So there's going to be so much gold in this episode. I am so excited for you to check it out. If you haven't yet, make sure you hit the subscribe button, hit the review button. If you're enjoying this, let us know how you like the show. And without further ado, we are going to dive right in. And here is my man, David Meltzer.
All right, David Meltzer, welcome to the podcast, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited about talking about this journey and how to help people with their passion, profitability, and purpose.
Yeah, I love that. And so to get started, can you just give sort of the audience like a foundation of, you know, like how'd you grow up? Where'd you come from? You know, what was life like for you as a little kid?
You know, my journey was really about my relationship with money because I grew up with no money. In fact, I feel sorry for people, including my own kids, that are growing up with money because I can't teach you what I learned from being broke. I had a single mom with six kids who packed my dinner in a paper bag and worked two jobs, including filling up turnstiles at convenience stores with greeting cards. And the funny thing about growing up with no money is I was always happy, but I believed one thing, which ended up to be untrue, is that money is what bought happiness and love. I thought for sure that the only times I wasn't happy was catching my mom frustrated and financially frustrated, crying over a dishwasher breaking down or the car or summer camp or graduate school or whatever it may be. And so my journey was one about if I made a lot of money, I could buy my mom a house and a car and I'd always be happy. And so that journey led me, my mom had a motto, doctor, lawyer, or failure. Originally, it was going to be professional football player, but in college, I played football and got ran over by Christian Okoye, my first play. So I remember literally lying on my back saying to myself, doctor, lawyer, or failure.
Yeah.
After the season, I thought I'd be a doctor. I was pre-med and went over to visit my brother who was a doctor, and I almost bowled him over with disbelief when I told him, like most 18-year-olds, I'm like, oh, doctors have to be in hospitals? I hate hospitals. He's looking at me like, are you kidding me? And at 18, he gave me what I consider some of the best advice, especially according to the topic that we want to talk about this journey, is he told me to be more interested than interesting. And, you know, I really took that to heart. In fact, I went to the law school I went to with that in mind. I reverse engineered the law school that I went to by what law school had the best, most highest paying jobs. And that was Tulane University in New Orleans because they taught oil and gas law. They taught maritime law, and oil and gas litigators made the most money and they had the most graduates that got those jobs. So I actually connected the dots backwards, learned from my brother. I went to that law school, ironically, still driven by money. I was always in pursuit of different jobs and opportunities, sometimes, you know, scams or whatever.
While you were in law school.
Yeah. Any way I could do to find money. And I ended up applying for a job to sell legal research online. Now, this is 1992. So when I say online, it's DOS, 9600 baud modem, the computers that you wheeled around on a luggage cart. But when I went to my mom, I asked her, you know, should I be this oil and gas litigator? I got a six-figure job out of law school. Or should I sell legal research online, which had a comp plan of, you know, 250 grand. Without blinking, my mom told me I got to be a real lawyer, that the internet was a fad, that if I pursued the internet, I'd make a huge mistake after all the work and all the things I had done to be what I wanted to be. It's a great lesson because a lot of people on this journey, when they're in their 20s and 30s, they think because somebody loves them, most of we call those people family and friends, that necessarily they're giving us good advice. They do care about us and we should take their advice, but just because they love us doesn't mean they give us good advice. You really need to find people that sit in the situation you want to be in and ask them for advice. Even if they don't care about you or love you, you're better off getting advice from someone with the situational knowledge and experience that you're looking for. In fact, I tell people all the time, my easiest formula of life is find out what you want, find out who has what you want, and either ask them for what you want or ask them to teach you how they get what you want. That's how it's the fastest, easiest, simplest way. So I went ahead and took the job in the internet 9 months out of law school.
Okay. So let's break that down for a sec. So I think what's interesting is like, you look at this whole journey of, you know, one, figuring out I'm going to be a lawyer, two, going through law school, taking the bar, like doing all these things, spending all this money, right, to be a lawyer. It's not cheap, right? And you go through all of this and then you get to this point of, this is what I've been pursuing for years, but I kind of have this like gut feeling that maybe this internet thing is like really actually something. So I'm curious, like what goes through your head aside from, you know, you talk to your mom a little bit, but you know, I would imagine that that's an easier thing to talk about than actually pull the trigger on.
And I think it's really important because I came up with this philosophy. I kept, you know, convincing myself I was going to vote for what I wanted. I kept saying, you know, when you vote for what you want, you get what you want. When you elect what you want, when you vote for something. And a lot of times in my life, it seemed as if I was voting for what everybody else wanted from me. I was a pleaser. I wanted to make other people happy. I wanted them to like me. I wanted them to love me. I wanted them to think I was cool. Whatever it was, I was consistently voting for what other people wanted for me. And then I'd elect it into my life. And then I'd resent them for when it came in my life because it wasn't what I wanted. It was what they wanted. And so it was a very, very valuable lesson. I think one other thing, one of the things I've learned over the years is to illuminate to people because they take things in snapshots. And, you know, these pieces of advice that I give are these snapshots. But I think it's important to understand that, you know, although it took great courage to vote for what I wanted and to tell my mom and my aunts and uncles and my siblings, you know, I wasn't going to be a real lawyer. And even my friends in law school, I love the fact that they all laughed at me, made fun of me, scoffed at me. And then 2 years after I was a multimillionaire, they were begging me for a job. Right. I can't tell you how many people behind my back are like, oh, my God, did you hear Dave Meltzer is not going to be a real lawyer? Oh, my God. Yeah. Can you believe he's going in the internet? Oh, my gosh. So anyway, what I find really interesting is that there's no black or white. There's still the hedging and the mitigating of risk and the blend. So, you know, this is the way my mind worked. I said, OK, I'm going to go ahead and vote for this, but I'm still going to take the bar. Right. I can always go back to being a lawyer.
Always.
You know. So there was a bunch of blending in there. And I even said, look, you know, if it doesn't work out, at least it paid me a big expense account and I got to travel around and, you know,
you get some positives.
Like for me, it was like, what did I have to lose? And I think what's important is people, if you're going to take risks, go ahead and frame the risks and mitigate your risks. Look at your timing and your risk tolerance because you can end up doing like really brave things. So, you know, I was on the phone with Tom Penn. He's the co-owner of the LAFC. And when he got out of law school, he wanted to work in sports, but his dad was a criminal lawyer. And so like, he's like, I'll just work for my dad for a couple of years and try to get into sports law, you know, but he ended up 6 years, but he was mitigating, right? He calls it angling. He was angling to what he wants. I was angling to make a lot of money. And, you know, fortunately for me, because I did put the attention and intention into it, I ended up doing very, very well through that mitigation of risk. And I was a millionaire 9 months out of law school, which just reaffirmed that money buys love and happiness. And that kept on reoccurring and reaffirming through my career, not because, you know, of luck. It was literally, I consistently paid attention to and gave intention to the coincidences I won. I took chances, I mitigated risks, I made blends. So for example, you know, it wasn't an accident. I was the top sales guy, right? I literally a very productive, accessible, and gracious in what I did. I was very good at what I did. I practiced. I 16 hours of productivity with twice the efficiency and twice statistical success. I called it the power of 64. So, you know, there's a lot of not only hard work, but smart work and also long work. I was willing to work long, meaning take a perspective that I wasn't going to get there overnight. And I tell people all the time, when you take the perspective and detach your emotions from an outcome and you're accepting and faithful and patient for something to come, it usually comes faster.
Yeah.
It's when you attach your hopes and dreams and everything to one outcome that I'll be happy when I'm a millionaire. Yeah. You're never a millionaire. But when you do what it takes to become a millionaire, it comes fast and it comes easy and it becomes accurate. So that's what I did.
Okay. So if we dive into that, I'm curious, like, so you go full force into the sales. I'm curious, what was your, if we broke it down, like how much percentage were you putting into strategy? And then how much was just like all out action executing? Because I think sometimes in life, people get so caught up in the, you know, the strategy or how am I going to plan this or how am I going to work on that? But at the end of the day, it's like, you're never going to learn more other than when you like actually take the actions.
Yeah. So I broke things down. The smartest distinction I made in my life was I wasn't going to be a normal person. I didn't believe in work. I didn't believe in work. I decided, you know, through playing sports in school and all the things that I learned, that there was literally activity you got paid for and activity you didn't get paid for. Hmm. And I'll give you an example. You know, even today I joke around, but I would pay about $2 million to play second base for the Padres this season, if they have the season, right? So, but I would. And ironically, they pay their second baseman $2 million to play baseball, right? So it's activity that he gets paid for, but it would activity that I don't get paid for. In fact, it's activity I would pay for, right? Now, here's the interesting thing. I could guarantee the Padres that they would have a $4 million swing. They not only wouldn't have to pay him, but I would give them $2 million. And here's the irony is I could guarantee that at the minimum, they'd come in the same place they came in last year. So what do they have to lose? But my point is, once I made that distinction in life, that wait a second, if we learn to love and find the light, the love and the lessons in everything that we do, I'm sure the second baseman for the Padres doesn't love every aspect of their job.
Yeah.
And I guarantee it because I was one of the most notable sports agents in the world and the biggest and greatest athletes. I know they didn't love every part of their job.
Right.
But they learned, the best people learn to love and find the light. And so that was a perspective I took at 24 years old, that I was going to maximize the activity I got paid for. So what does that mean? I was going to, one, make sure that I held the 16 hours of productivity a day. That whatever it took, that I was going to be productive 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. By pure math, I was going to beat everybody because out of math, you know, that's 14 productive days compared to five. So at the very minimum, if I could stay focused for 16 hours, then I was almost working 3 weeks to every one of the more qualified, more seasoned salespeople. Now I said, on the planning side, what if I could, as a goal, be twice as efficient with that 16 hours? So now I could get 32 hours of productivity. And so what I looked for was what I called the 4 minutes of efficiencies. And so I broke things down and I said, okay, what do I do, you know, every minute, every hour, every day, every month, every week, whatever. And where can I find 4 minutes? Because every time I could find 4 minutes in a system, a solution, an efficiency I could find, that would create 24 hours of productivity in a year. So if there was something that I could save 4 minutes a day, every single day, it equaled 24 hours of productivity, 3 full days of productivity. And so, you know, I started realizing on average, people spend 80 hours a year looking for things they've lost. And the majority of the things they lose is their wallet, their phone, and their keys. So like very simple things like making sure I always put my phone, my keys, and my wallet in the same place. So, you know, that's two full productive weeks, 80 hours a week every year of my life since I've been 24, I've saved, right? And so all these things add up. And then I started saying, and this came from Tony Gwynn. I know you're a San Diego guy too, State guy. So, you know, I've been blessed to be around Marshall Faulk and Tony Gwynn, two of the greatest San Diego State athletes ever created. But what I loved about Tony Gwynn is he owned the San Diego School of Baseball down on Mission Gorge, real close to the school, with Alan Trammell. And when I was 12 years old, I would go into the San Diego School of Baseball and hit batting cages. And I was always amazed that the greatest hitter of all time, Tony Gwynn, in the season that he batted 394, would sit in front of, for hours, a monochrome green screen with a Betamax machine, watching exactly where, you know, Maddox release was. Again and again, and just being a professional, being a perfectionist, right. Finding exactly, this is what it looked like to me, like on a green screen, though, right?
Yeah.
Just like this. And you could see him staring real close into this monochrome screen to see exactly how many inches it was from his ear when he threw that slider, right? And, you know, Tony Gwynn has the highest batting average against Maddox, 444, which is incredible. But what I learned at 12 years old was I needed to be a professional, that I was going to be more statistically successful at what I did. Tony Gwynn was not the greatest athlete, but he was so statistically successful about what he did. So if I could take the 16-hour productivity, turn it into 32 hours of productivity, turn it into 64 hours of productivity, 7 days a week, because there was no activity other than that which I got paid for, and that's which I didn't, which meant I vacationed every day, and I still do. I'm not one of those dudes that you're like, oh my God, I need 3 weeks off. Oh, I got to. I'm literally like, I vacation every day. People would pay to do stuff that I get to do. I was just on the, literally before you, I was with the Admiral, right? I was with David Robinson, and I'm thinking to myself, shit, I'd pay to do this. This is so cool. And he's so interesting. And right. And you may feel the same way about some guests, not me, but other guests that come on here, you might pay, you know, to do that. And but what happened was, I beat people with math. That's, people ask me, how do you make $1 million 9 months out of law school? I was laughing at the company because they gave me all these awards and accolades and recognitions. And in my mind, I was like, you guys are idiots. I didn't even hit the number. And, you know, my friend's like, what are you talking about? I go, think about it. I was working 10 years. I just did it in 9 months. I did what most people take 10 years to do. I beat them with math. 64 hours of productivity a day. And I've been continuing to beat people with math and to support things with math and understanding the quantitative value of productivity, accessibility, and gratitude. And those three things and those lenses allow me literally to accelerate and grow at an exponential rate, which allow me to get what I want in my life. Hmm.
Dang. Wild. Epic. Okay, cool. So let's go from here. So 9 months in, boom, making $1 million, right? Didn't do law school, went kind of off course, right, to this other sales role. And I heard you talking in another podcast where, you know, you had had this family, you married your high school sweetheart, right? You got a couple dream kids.
Well, no, she hated me. So it was my dream girl. She just hated me from elementary school. I threw an egg at her because she won't go steady with me at sixth grade camp. She embarrassed me. So I married a girl that actually hated me through junior high school and high school. And once again, it reaffirmed that money buys love and happiness, because in my mind, that'd be the only reason why she now liked me.
Hmm. Okay. So let's dive into that though. So you have this money, you start building this family of kids. You're like everything on paper, people are like, wow, David is like,
minus
than a dream. And I heard you share this story of how you were in this house you'd built in Rancho Santa Fe, right? And basically had this moment of like emptiness in a sense, right? Of like unfulfillment. And I'm curious, like, why do you think that happened, right? If you know, you had everything.
Because I grew up in a world of not enough. So everything to me was not enough. I lived in a world of being a victim. I looked at other people going, why didn't I have that? Why me? Why my dad leave? Why can't I have a car? Why can't I have parents that could afford to send me to summer camp? Why don't I have enough food? Why can't we go out to eat? These are questions I asked all the time. And when I started making money at 24, I moved into the world from not enough to just enough. So everything was for me. And I fooled myself because I believed that I would give to get. And a lot of people talk about the more you give, the more you get. I think that's really dangerous because I started trading for everything. I was very philanthropic. I helped my family. I, you know, gave down payments to my brothers for homes, but I always expected something back, acknowledgement, recognition, trade, negotiation, and everything was fit into this realm of just enough. In fact, in order to be happy, I started buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like. And the biggest thing I ever bought to impress people I didn't like that I absolutely didn't need was that huge home. And I think it really sunk in that I was moving my life in an empty, shallow, just for me direction, and that I was living, you know, they talk about the imposter syndrome or fraud. Yeah. You know, I literally lived that every day that, you know, no, everybody was too afraid to tell me the truth. You know, there's a book that's called, you know, Don't Take Yes for an Answer. That's all I ever got was yes for an answer, whether it was my mom, my wife, my family, you know, everybody would just tell me how great and how I was Midas. And, you know, the truth was I was unhappy, you know, and I was living my life in an empty, shallow for me direction. And I had to make a change. And luckily for me, I made that change thanks to a few people in my life actually not saying yes.
What was the shift you made, right, to go, because it's a big shift.
Yeah. So there's three things that happened. Just give me a few minutes and a little bit of leverage on this. But these stories are worth it because I know people are in their 20s and 30s and they think this way. Well, when I was 10 years old, my dad was my hero. He had left when I was 5. I didn't understand what a deadbeat dad was. I didn't understand divorce or money in the 70s. And my dad was rich. He retired and raced horses, harness horses. He, you know, didn't give any child support to my mom. But in my mind, my dad was a superhero. He actually even married a girl closer to my age than his, drove a convertible Cadillac. He was super cool, you know. And at 10, though, my dad made a huge mistake. And it may not sound bad, but he forgot my birthday. And it wasn't the fact that he forgot my birthday. It was the fact that when I confronted him, he said, oh, I didn't forget your birthday. I don't believe in birthdays. And at 10 years old, for him to lie to me when he had celebrated his birthday, his wife's birthday, my sibling's birthday, I literally went the other direction. My dad went from hero to zero in one birthday. And I told my dad that I hated him. I told him he was a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, a back-end seller, an overseller. I hated my dad. And for 20 years, I hated my dad. And he caused me all types of pain. I tried to have a relationship with him, and I always felt like he was manipulating me. And but at 30 years old, I'm married and living in my dream house, no kids yet. My dad sent me a birthday present for the first time in 20 years. And when I opened it, it was a big box. It was a sport coat. And I put it on and it fit perfectly. And I started to cry because it fit perfectly. I couldn't believe that he had changed, that he was considerate enough to not only send me a gift, but find out my size exactly. And as I opened it up to see if it says, you know, especially made for David Meltzer's birthday or Armani, he had torn out all the pockets in the lining of the jacket. And I immediately went into ego-based consciousness. I went into hate rage, and I called my father and I screamed at him, why are you punishing me? It's my birthday, my 30th birthday. Why are you punishing me? And he said, what are you talking about? I said, you sent me a gift I can't even wear. He said, because it's not for wearing. I said, why would you send me a jacket I can't wear? He said, I want you to hang it in the closet and remind you that money cannot buy happiness. I want you to remind yourself you don't need to be the richest man in the cemetery. I want you to remind yourself a jacket with no pockets is to be buried in, to remind you you can't take anything with you when you're gone. And most importantly, I want it to remind you that you're my son, that you're just like me. And I still get choked up. I'm like, I'm nothing like you. I hate you. I'm nothing. You're a liar, a cheater, manipulator. I want nothing to do with you. And I hung up on him. Now, years later, the second incident happened that changed my life. I was now running Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment. At that time, I was CEO of the world's first smartphone. So I'd worked my way through the Silicon Valley, raised hundreds of millions of dollars, was a very chic CEO, 30 something. And, you know, in my own head, you know, that Midas legend lived on. But years later, I became CEO of Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, the sports agency. And I invited my friend to play golf. Actually, he's the boy at fourth grade, was my best friend in sixth grade. He asked my wife if she would go study with me, and because I was too afraid. He's the one that yelled out, dude, she said no, and embarrassed me. So anyway, we were good friends, and I invited him to go to the Masters with me. I said, hey, let's go to the Masters. It's the coolest sporting event that I get to go to. We can go with Shannon Sharp and Chris Carter and Warren Moon and maybe Tiger Woods and Curtis Strange, go to the back, you know, cabins, all the great access that I had in my great job. Yeah. And he's like, I don't want to go. I'm like, whoa, what do you mean? He goes, I don't want to hang out with you or your friends. I don't want to go to the Masters with you. I was like, why not? He goes, I don't like what you guys do. I'm like, come on, Rob, I'm not doing what those guys are doing. Just come with me. He said, David, you can lie to me, but don't lie to yourself. I don't want to be around it. And that crushed me. Talk about, you know, not taking yes for an answer.
Yeah.
You know, he gave me a big no. And what hurt so bad is that he was the first one to expose me for the imposter that I was, the unhappiness that I was living with, the buying things I didn't need, doing the things and surrounding myself with the people that I didn't want to surround myself and the ideas that I shouldn't be around. And literally 2 weeks later, my life would change. And thank you for indulging me, by the way, because this is one of my favorite stories.
I love this. Absolutely. So, please, go on.
2 weeks later, I went to the Grammy Awards with a rapper named Little John, who has become fairly famous as well. And John and I went. Now, the funny thing was I lied to my wife. She didn't want me to go. At this time, I have three daughters under 8 years old, and I was partying too much. I wasn't at home. My wife had asked me not to go to the Grammy Awards, to stay at home with the family. So I lied to her and said I had a business meeting. I changed clothes in the car, and I ended up coming home at 5:30 in the morning, completely wasted. And there was my wife waiting for me. And she was crying. And as I walked in, she said, I'm like, what's the matter? She said, I'm not happy. I was like, what happened? She said, you need to take stock in who you are and what you become. I'm leaving. I'm not happy. You're going down the wrong path. And if you don't take stock in who you were and what you want to become, you're going to end up dead. And I don't want to be here. And I got so mad, even madder than I did at my dad. I was like, how dare you? Who do you think you're talking to? Look around you. Look in the garage. Look at the nanny. Look at your life. You don't work. Are you kidding me? F you. And I went to bed. When I woke up in the morning, I wish I could tell you that some great enlightenment came over me, but it didn't. I was so mad. I was so offended. I was so resentful. I couldn't imagine her even saying what she said to me. How dare her? I thought, how dare you say that to me? And I'm thinking about how I'm going to take away her happiness, because in my mind, money buys happiness and love. Right. I was going to take all the money, all the houses, the golf course, the ski mountain, the Ferrari. I was going to take everything, including my kids. I was going to show her. And then that's when my life changed. As I reached the pinnacle of arrogance, I looked over in my closet and there was that jacket. And it was singing to me, you idiot. You're just like your dad. Everything you hate about your father for the last 20 years, you hate about yourself. You are a liar. You are a cheater. You are a manipulator, a back-end seller, overseller. You're the worst of the worst, and you better take stock in who you are. You're going to end up dead, and you're so unhappy. Shame. I remember shame on you, and I just sat there crying. And that's when I decided to change my entire life. And that was, ironically, 2 years before I ended up losing everything in 2008 in the bankruptcy. But I was well prepared for that. I always joke around, I'm the first guy you probably ever met that didn't bottom out when he lost everything. I bottomed out 2 years before. I just created such a train wreck for myself that it took me years to get to the point where I lost everything in order to recoup what I did in the right manner. And so that's my journey of finding the values of gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration that I live by today.
Dang, powerful. Truly, and thank you for sharing that. And I'm curious, like, so now, you know, bankruptcy happens and, you know, they say sometimes in life it's like peaks and valleys, right? You go up, you slam down, you go up. And so I'm curious, like, this next time as you started to come up from this like deep hole that you had gotten into, like what were some of the new philosophies that you took with you as you started to rebuild that said, you know, when I do it this time, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z differently?
Yeah, the first thing I decided was what world I was going to live in. I definitely didn't want to live in the world of not enough where I was a victim. I definitely didn't want to live in the world of just enough where everything was for me. I was now going to live with faith. And, you know, faith to me is the aggregate of what I think, say, do, believe, and my unconscious competencies, my personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions. Doesn't necessarily have to be spiritual or even religious. But for me, faith is that aggregate. And so I said to myself, I'm going to live with faith in a world of more than enough. No longer would I give to receive. No longer would I trade my life. No longer would I negotiate my life. From now on, I was going to live in a world of abundance, a world of more than enough of everything for everyone. And I was going to have faith in that. And I was going to do it by focusing in on receiving. I was going to, instead of giving to receive, I was going to receive so I could give. Everything was not going to happen to me or for me. It was going to happen through me. That I had to realize that I'm always connected to the greatest source of life, lessons, and love. And I was allowed that with appreciation, me adding value and gratitude to give it all away. I was going to give my life away with faith that there was plenty more to have. And I was going to receive more and more. I wasn't going to, you know, I still believe in money. I didn't give away the fact money doesn't buy happiness, but it allows me to shop. I just was going to shop for the right things. And I was going to shop for the right things to help other people. So my motto became make a lot of money to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun with my life. And I went ahead and transitioned my life. I started Sports One Marketing with Warren Moon, the Hall of Fame quarterback, gave a charitable purpose to cause everything that we did. I focused in on what I was going to do with the money when I received it, not how I was going to get it, meaning in the receiving or a trade. And so in this abundant world, I was able to rebuild everything in the right way, in the right direction. And more importantly, over the last 3.5 years, I've been able to build my own brand with my own mission of empowering over a billion people to be happy. I believe in happiness. I believe in empowering other people to be happy. I know that if I can find 1,000 people like you that can empower 1,000 people to empower 1,000 people to be happy, I can change the world. I can actually change the world, create consciousness. Happiness, the cool thing about it, it's super viral, right? So happiness spreads simply. Just by witnessing happiness, it spreads. It strengthens you mentally, physically, and spiritually. Financially, it strengthens you. And even more importantly today, happiness will strengthen your immune system. So protects you against other diseases. So I am a huge advocate and an empowerment specialist in happiness. My whole objective in life is to empower others to be happy. So all my TV shows, my movies, my podcasts, my speeches, my free trainings every single Friday, which I've transformed over the last 20 years from teaching people to make money and sell into how to be happy. Pitch competitions, anything that I do, I give all my books for free. I give my exercises and guides for free. Yeah. I give my trainings for free. So I just can create and change the world, because in the end, that humility of being able to be a catalyst to create a social change of that size and magnitude, I believe, and want to tell all you young people out there, you cannot out-ask the universe. People will laugh at you, scoff at you, make fun of you. They've always have, from the day that I decided not to be a real lawyer to the day that I ran the world's first smartphone for Samsung, from when I ran the most notable sports agency, speaking, books, movies, TV, podcasts. People laugh today. They think, what do you think you are, Jesus Christ? You're going to change the world? Yes, I am going to change the world. You go ahead, you laugh at me, but eventually you know what they'll do? I promise you, they will applaud you. And I hope that everyone someday will be applauding me when I create a collective consciousness of happiness and change the world.
Love that. So two things I want to dive into there. One, what would you say are three things that someone listening to this podcast can do to create happiness?
Yeah. So number one, take inventory of your values. You know, there's not a why problem in the world. There's a what problem. And the way that we find out what we want is to every day take inventory of our values, our personal values, our experiential values, our giving values, our receiving values. Take inventory of those every day and don't be afraid of being a hypocrite. Trust me, one of the biggest things that happens when we're young is we're afraid of changing our mind. We're afraid of telling people we changed our mind. We're afraid of them making fun of us that we changed our mind. Oh my God, I thought you said you're going to be a lawyer. It's like a huge fear. No, take inventory of your values and don't be afraid of being a hypocrite. Number two, ask. Ask two things. One, how you can be of service or value to others. But more importantly, don't think that people are gatekeepers. There's nobody in your way. There's no one stopping you from what you want. Everyone is a sponsor or a power sponsor. You're actually giving them a gift. You're giving them a present. You're making them feel good by allowing them to make an investment in you and help you. It's so flattering and so awesome when people ask you for help. So go ahead. Ask big. You can't ask the universe, but ask in person, on the phone, via email, media, radio, print, TV, social media. Ask. And then third, practice ending fear. You know, if I could give you a practice for your life, it would be to be a ferocious Buddha. Number one, be ferocious in identifying when you're in a fear state of mind. If you have a need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, guilty, resentful, if you have a need, you know, to worry, all of these things are just going to accelerate you in the wrong trajectory. They're going to create interferences and voids and shortages in your life. So be ferocious about, one, identifying when you're in fear, and two, dropping like a Buddha down to center, to your higher frequency, so that you can move and accelerate in the right trajectory. Don't create the interference and voids. Go ahead and move in the right direction by practicing ending fear. Look, everybody, including me, I'm fearful every day. I have a need every day to be offended or resentful or angry or frustrated. It's just, how quickly can I get back on the right trajectory towards my potential to enjoy, be happy with the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit pursuit of my potential? And that's the practice. So it goes from years to months to weeks to days to hours to minutes to moments. The faster you can get back to that peace, to that center, to that accelerated potential, the better you will be and the better you'll feel.
Yeah. Love that. Very cool. So one thing I'm curious, you say, don't be afraid to ask the universe. So I'm curious, like, let's say someone's listening to this and they're like, screw it. I'm going to say the things I might get laughed at. People might say that's crazy, but like, how would you say in a practical standpoint that you would advise them to go about asking the universe big? Like, is this, they just think about it? Do they write it down? Do they, speak it into existence?
All of them. So for me, to ask the universe is to think, say, do, believe, have your personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions all aligned with the what. Right? It's not just a matter of dreaming. The continuum, the law of attraction is true. But what most people don't know is the catalyst for the law of attraction is the law of Goya. And the law of Goya is get off your ass. Nothing's going to happen if you're high, sick, broke, dreaming on your mom's couch about the Ferrari you want. You got to get off your ass. You got to make a plan. You got to get alignment, take action, and prepare for adjustment. So there's a great blend of faith and pragmatic living in order to effectuate the law of attraction. The more that you put out into the universe, the faster and more accurately it will come to you.
Mm. Love that. So put it all out there and then massive action.
Massive.
Right, backed by it. So one thing that you just said now, it's like you want to vibrate on that level. And one thing I've heard you say is that what vibrates the fastest is the truth. And so my sort of question would be, you know, if there's someone out there and they're ready to fully immerse into, you know, vibrating their truth, but they don't know, honestly, like what that truth is for them, would you have any idea or any guidance on, you know, how they could go about finding that truth for themselves?
Yeah. So that's where we have to be consistent. The biggest problem that exists is time, because time skews our perspective. If we look backwards on time, it seems to go very quickly. If we look forward, it seems to be a long way off. Right? When we graduate college and look back, it's like, whoa, that was a fast 4 years. But when we're at orientation, our freshman year, we're like, whoa, it's going to be a long ride.
Yeah.
Right. So what happens is, and I'm going to use a lily pond example. It's the 1% of the 1% that have faith and patience in order to effectuate the actions that they take. What do I mean? Let's say that you have a goal that may take 30 years. And if we were blessed enough that somebody could tell you, hey, you're going to start this dream and it's going to take you 30 years, you still, 1% of the 1% would make it, even though I could guarantee it would take 30 years. And I'll tell you why. If I told you that every year you would double the acceleration that you have, the growth that you have. So if it's a lily pond and one lily, you know, in 1 year, and it would be two lilies the second year, four the next, and it would take 30 years to fill the lily pond. The problem with time and perception is most kids, when I told them, hey, how many years is going to take you to be halfway there? They would tell you 15 years. That's not true. It's 29 years. It takes you 29 years to fill half of your pond. It's that last year through acceleration and exponential growth, compound interest, that you get the second half. The worst part is it takes, you know, 28 years to get to a quarter of the way there. So what happens is people don't see the growth. Their perceptions and their senses aren't strong enough to see the growth that they're having. Their memories aren't good enough to see the growth that they're having. So most people quit, because they're not enjoying the consistent, persistent pursuit of it. Mm-hmm. They've attached their emotions to an outcome. So all they feel like is, man, I'm on year 10. This is never going to happen. I quit. And so 99% of the people quit before they get to a quarter of the way there. Of the 1% that hang on, another 99% of the 1% quit before they're 50% of the way there, which is so sad, because they're 29 of the 30th ways of the way there. And this is the killer. This is the dream killer. This is the true lesson that I want you to learn about this idea of your journey, about finding your passion, your purpose, and your profitability, is that you have to be able to have patience and faith that if you're doing the right things, focusing in on the skills that you're developing, the knowledge that you're acquiring, and maintaining that desire to must be what you can be, and being a hypocrite by taking inventory of your values, asking and attracting, studying or paying attention to and giving attention to the coincidences that you want, what you have planned, you don't have planned in your sleep, doing things now, and then finally practicing ending fear. I promise you that those 30 years will be enjoyable, and you will not only get to 100% of the way there, but in year 31, you'll get to 200, year 32 to 400. And that's when the real bonus rounds happen. And you too will have everything you desire rapidly and accurately.
Dang. Mic drop. Dang. That is such a, I've never looked at it that way, but that's such an interesting perspective to look at, where it really does take all this time. And if you look at it in a compounding manner, right, it's like you could be so close, but perceive that you're so far. And I love how you explain that. That is amazing. Let's say there's people that are listening to this, David. I know, you know, obviously you got your free Friday trainings that you're doing, which are massively, massively, massively valuable. And I'm curious, you know, for anybody that wants to follow you, see what you're up to, get an idea of what you're, you know, what's going on in your world, where's the best place for them to find you?
Well, Instagram, it's at David Meltzer, David Meltzer on all the platforms. dmeltzer.com is my website. I give away my email address and answer everything myself. It's david@dmeltzer.com. No surprise there. And I have a text community if you want to be notified for trainings or guides or free books. I give my books away for free. So it's just simply 949-298-2905. Go ahead, text me, email me at david@dmeltzer.com, dmeltzer.com. Register for free training, books, guides, exercises, whatever you want. It's free. If it's free, it's me, and hopefully it'll help you too.
Awesome. Massive amounts of value that everybody can tap into. Now, the last question I ask everybody, ask every guest this question, because like we've talked about and seen in your life, execution is the name of the game. And so for anyone that's listening to this, what would you say is one thing that they can do in the next 24 to 48 hours to start finding direction in their life?
You know, I would be a student of their calendar. So the one thing that you can do is if you take a minimum of 10 minutes a day in the morning and a minimum of 10 minutes a day at night, study your calendar, pay attention to and give intention to the coincidences you want in the three areas of your calendar: what you have planned, what you don't have planned, the empty space of your calendar, and pay attention also to your sleep. Make sure that you have an adaptable routine and a normal routine that effectuate your objectives. When you study your calendar, make sure you look at it with the lens of, number one, gratitude, a lens of productivity, how much value you're going to provide, a lens of accessibility, how accessible are you to others, and how are you accessing what you want? And finally, a lens of gratitude. Find the light, the love, and the lessons in all the activity you get paid for, all the activity you don't get paid for. Say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. And I promise you, this simple trick will accelerate and exponentially grow you in a direction that you want to go by finding that what and executing on it.
Yeah. Love that. And to dive into that a little deeper. So let's say someone at the end of the day, right, they look at their calendar, how much production did I do today? How much value did I do today? What am I grateful for today? What would you say? Like, is it just a matter of looking, putting it on a scale 1 to 10, journaling about it?
It's studying, right? So it's not just paying attention to or looking at it. It's right. Giving it your intention and then going ahead and facilitating that calendar for tomorrow based off of what you learned today, right? And so you're always looking for the lessons. Pain is just an indicator. Mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, and financial pain is an indicator that you have a lesson to learn. It's like a turn signal on your car. It's just telling you, hey, man, go in this direction. It's a better direction. It'll get you there faster. It'll get you to a better place, a better situation. Pain is an indicator. That's all pain is. So learn the lessons and the pain will go away. Life's about lessons. Keep on learning lessons. Pain's the indicator. When you learn the lesson, pain will go away.
Yeah, totally. And then every day, just better and better and better every single day. And that all compounds.
You got it, my friend.
Awesome. Well, David, it's been an absolute honor. It was so cool just to hear your stories, your journey. And I know people are going to get an immense amount of value from this. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you, Stu. Take care and have a blessed day.
All right. Take care, David.
Take care. Thank you.
Congratulations, my friend, on crushing it through another episode here on Finding Direction. Make sure to give yourself a pat on the back, a round of applause, because you are one of the few who is not willing to settle for less than a life that lights up your soul. And that is absolutely something that we need to celebrate. I want to say thank you, as always, for hanging out with me on today's episode. I hope you got some value, some nuggets, and more importantly, I hope you take these things and you go start applying them and executing on them in your life. Thank you so much for being here. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day. And if you don't want to go anywhere, I have another episode coming up right after this. So feel free to stick around and I will talk to you soon.